Chapter 1. Canon Divergent. Summary. Natasha asks Matt for help to stop Clint from making a mistake they would all regret. Warnings. Canon temporary character death. Depression. Matt, he needs you. Natasha was pleading, a sort of vulnerability that she showed only on rare occasions. We all need you. Please. He left, Natasha. Matt bit back. It took everything he had not to throw the phone at the closest wall and just go back to rotting away in his apartment like he had been doing for weeks. Everyone is gone, but he left. He made a choice. Matt, he's hurting, Natasha sighed. We're all hurting, Matt scoffed. We all lost people, but he's the one who chose to leave. None of us ever had good coping mechanisms, Daredevil. Natasha scoffed back. She had this habit of mirroring his attitude to force him to unmask. How long has it been since the last time you left that depression cave of yours, huh? How long has it been since you had actual food? How long has it been since you talked to another human being? Matt didn't answer, and he could feel himself slipping closer to a shutdown with every word that echoed through the phone and bounced off of every surface in the apartment. We're all messed up. We all lost people to this shit. We're all in pain, Natasha sighed, her voice turning softer as she could no doubt tell Matt was struggling to regulate. We're all alone, so we have to stick together. Matt scoffed again, but this time Natasha's voice stayed soft and quiet. I tried, Matt. I tried to talk to him. I tried to get him to come back. She paused, and Matt could tell she had gotten up and was starting to pace through the temporary office she had built for herself. He doesn't want to talk to me. He doesn't want to talk to Rhodey, and he doesn't want to talk to Steve. Tony's AWOL with Pepper, and so's Thor. Bruce has thrown himself into his research. That guy's even harder to reach than you. She was quiet for a long moment, but Matt knew it wasn't to give him room to speak. It was to find the words to voice what was going through her own head. We're trying to build something here. Carol, Rocket, and Rhodey, Steve, and I, we're trying to build something to help the people that are still here. The world is a mess, but there is one thing you can do right now. There's one thing you can do to help. Natasha leaned against the wall, resting her head against a window or something made from glass that distorted her voice ever so slightly. Please, Matt. You're the last person that might be able to stop him from doing something incredibly stupid and dangerous. I know he hurt you, and he left you alone with this pain. I'm not asking you to forgive him. I'm asking you to stop him from making an even bigger mistake, one that might cost him his life if we don't do something about it. Matt scoffed again, but it was starting to get lost as his breathing turned shallow. He could feel his nails digging into his skin where he had balled his hand into a fist. But the pain was the only thing that still felt real as the world started to spiral around him. Please, Matt, I know you still love him. Don't let him make this mistake. Natasha was close to crying now, and her frustration was clear in her voice. Don't let him turn back into a version of himself that he hates. I can't promise you anything, Matt muttered, barely loud enough that it even registered through the phone. Just try, please. Natasha breathed, sighing in relief. I just need you to try. I'll try, Matt breathed, wincing with pain as he started to deliberately relax his muscles, one part of his body at a time, in an attempt to ground himself. I'm guessing you already sent me the details? Including an image description for anything I couldn't get in the right format. Natasha agreed, taking a deep breath to try and center herself as well. Thank you, Matt. You know I wouldn't ask you to do this if I had any other option. Don't make me regret this, asshole, Matt muttered as he put on his cowl and mask and checked his billy clubs and knife before climbing up the stairs to his roof. Don't you fucking make me regret this. Matt took a deep breath, closing his eyes behind the opaque lenses of his mask and letting the noise of a city around him envelop him. The city was a lot more quiet now, after so many people had vanished. The regular rush of cars and pedestrians had been replaced by new, different noises. The reassuring background murmur Matt had learned to ground himself in after over 20 years of living with his heightened senses had been replaced with destruction and overwhelming chaos. Matt pulled up his mental map of the city, comparing it with this new reality around him. After orienting himself for a moment, he called up all the information Natasha had gathered and sent him, marking the points of interest and supplementing it with anything he knew about his ex-boyfriend that no one else knew. It took him a few minutes, but Matt narrowed down Clint's whereabouts to a few possible locations throughout the city. "Here goes nothing," he muttered, making his way over familiar rooftops, through Hell's Kitchen, and along the few hideouts Clint and him had used in their time together, whenever they needed a safe place to lick their wounds, or simply wanted to get away from their lives for a little while. When he didn't find any signs of his former partner in any of them, Daredevil made his way across the river and through Brooklyn. He wasn't nearly as familiar with these parts of the city, but he had been here enough times that he found his way to the last two points he knew Clint liked to hide out in when he didn't want to be found. The first was, just like any other spot Matt had checked throughout the city, a dead end. But the last spot, the penthouse of a long-abandoned high-rise, wasn't. "Hey, asshole!" Matt called, letting his voice echo through empty rooms as soon as he had jumped in through a broken skylight. There was no reaction, even though Matt could clearly make out the much too familiar heartbeat of Clint Barton. He wasn't surprised. Matt hadn't expected him to wear his hearing aids, but he couldn't stop himself from making an entrance, just in case he did hear him. Matt walked through the mostly dust-covered rooms, following the sound of Clint's heart and his rustling around in what seemed like a makeshift workshop. Clint was surrounded by the tools Matt had gotten used to after years of working together. But as he came closer, Daredevil realized he wasn't working on arrows or his bow, like he had expected. Instead, Clint was sharpening a sword of sorts. Frowning slightly under his mask, Matt made his way around the last corner. He had planned to surprise his ex, and he deserved the scare, for sure. But no matter how much it hurt Matt that Clint had left him in the shards of a broken world, he was holding a weapon that could seriously injure him if he made the wrong move. He didn't deserve that. Instead, Matt hopped onto the counter in the spacious kitchen, leaning back and waiting for Clint to finish his work or empty his mug. Either way, it was only a matter of time until the former Avenger came into the kitchen to make fresh coffee. It took almost 30 minutes until Clint left his workshop and walked into the kitchen, and another few seconds until he rounded the corner and spotted the dark figure sitting on the counter. "Shit, Matt!" he cursed, dropping and shattering his mug. Once upon a time, Matt would have made an effort to catch it, knowing that every single one of Clint's mugs had some kind of meaning or at least a sentimental image printed on it. That day, he just stayed on his counter, tilting his head and waiting for Clint to make his next move. "The fuck do you want?" Clint growled, and Matt could almost feel his glare on his skin. "You left," Matt signed simply. It was the first time they spoke since the day Thanos had snapped half of the universe out of existence. Matt had spent many, many hours since then working out what he wanted to say or do to Clint if they ever met again. But in that moment, now that he was actually face to face with the man he had spent so much time with before the world had fallen apart, he said nothing of it. "I like that, Mark," Clint growled back. He had broken from his stare and was now kicking the shards of the broken mug into a corner. "What do you want?" "You're not a killer," Matt signed, and his expression got softer even despite the anger and pain that was boiling in his entire body. "What difference does it make?" Clint asked, getting a new mug from a cabinet and starting to prepare the coffee maker. "Half the population is dead. Half of everything is gone." He glared at Matt again. "What difference does it make if I go back to killing?" "Maybe it doesn't make a difference for the world anymore," Matt admitted. "But it makes a difference for you. You are not a killer." "I've killed plenty, and you know it," Clint scoffed. "Don't act like I have clear conscience." "You've killed, but you're not a killer," Matt sighed, slipping off the counter and softly resting his gloved hand on Clint's shoulder. "Haven't you lost enough?" "I can't just sit and watch as the world descends into madness, Matt." Clint pulled away, clicking on the coffee maker and leaning against the counter while it started heating up. "I can't just hide away like you and wallow in my misery." Do you think I chose to do this? Matt scoffed. His mind was already firing up with all the things he wanted to throw at Clint's head, but he stopped himself. Instead, he took a deep breath to center himself before approaching Clint again. You left me, he reminded Clint. We both lost everything, but you are the one who left. You are the one who decided to do his own thing. He paused, trying to find the right thing to say. When nothing came to mind, he decided to go with pure, brutal honesty. I didn't even want to come, you know, he told Clint. If it was just me, you could be rotting in some hole or starting your own underground army or go around killing anyone you want. I don't care anymore. Clint wanted to say something, but Matt interrupted him with a glare and a snarl. Natasha sent me, Matt continued when Clint gave a small defensive nod. She still has hope, you know? After everything, she still has hope that there is a way to fix this, that heroes can fix this messed up world. Matt took off his helmet and threw it onto the counter where he had been sitting. Funny, isn't it? After all, heroes are the ones who brought us here in the first place. He pushed his cowl back, fully revealing his unfocused eyes and messy hair that matched his unshaven face. People who think they can single-handedly solve all the problems in the world, in the whole universe, even. He pulled off his gloves and trailed a hand through his greasy hair. People who think it doesn't matter how many people they have to hurt and kill, as long as it's for the greater good, you know? Is that why you gave up on Daredevil? Clint scoffed. You don't think it's the right way anymore? I'm not sure there's a point anymore, Matt admitted, for the first time actually fully facing Clint in an attempt at eye contact. Matty, Clint sighed, standing up straight and tilting his head. For a moment, he just studied the shorter man before he took a step forward and pulled him into an embrace. I'm sorry. Matt closed his eyes, leaning into the gentle touch and burying his face in Clint's shirt. He took in the familiar scent, even as it was mixed with alcohol and sweat from both of them, and, to his surprise, with cold smoke and the distinct smell of cigarette ash. I hate you, he muttered, knowing that Clint wouldn't hear it, but also hoping he could guess the word. I should have been there, Clint continued after a long minute. He softly pushed Matt back, tapping his face and brushing a soft kiss on his forehead. I should have been there for you. Author's notes about this universe. Canon diversions fairly soon after the snap. Clint and Matt had been dating for years, but when the snap happened, Clint still left to become Ronan. Natasha knows that Clint went black and can guess what he is about to do, but Clint won't react to any attempts to contact him. Chapter 2. Colorless. Summary. Having a soulmate is not always as wonderful as everyone says, especially if you have never actually met him before. Warnings. Implied reference child abuse, presumed character death, mentioned canon character death. The day Clint first started to notice a difference was a day like any other. There was nothing special about it. They didn't even have a new artist or guest performer in their show. It was just one of many days they spent with their tent and carnival setup on the meadow in Central Park. But maybe that was what's special about it. The fact that there was nothing out of the ordinary going on, and that Clint still noticed the first changes in his life. The very first thing Clint noticed happened a few minutes after the gates opened for guests. He was 15 years old and sitting atop one of the many steel beams holding the tent up, watching the crowd stream into the circus from above, where he had the best view of them. Hawkeye had always liked it up high. He had always liked sitting above the chaos, somewhere where no one would look for him, somewhere where it didn't matter that he couldn't hear with shit anymore and that he was different than most other kids his age. It was the place he felt safest, the place where he felt most like himself, even on the days when everything about himself felt wrong and foreign. That day, for the first time, Clint didn't feel safe up high. For one second to the next, a feeling of danger, a fear that he normally only knew when he was on the ground and surrounded by men stronger than him, went through him at seeing the distance between himself and the ground. For a moment, the time it took to take a few breaths, Clint felt dizzy, grabbing onto the metal bars of the scaffold under his fingers and pressing his eyes shut to get the world to stop spinning. The feeling vanished just as quickly as it had come, leaving Clint confused and almost as scared to stay up above as he was to climb back down and face the people that were making his life a living hell. Despite the tears in his eyes and the fact that his hands were shaking, Clint stayed, tilting his head up at the sky and taking a few controlled breaths to calm his nerves. When Clint looked down, the world was different. It was more vibrant, more exciting, and more overwhelming at the same time. It took the young archer until after the show to realize that somehow, somewhere, he had gotten close enough to his soulmate to set off their bond, to fill his world with color, and to build a connection between them. It was a connection that meant that as long as they were close enough together, Clint and his soulmate could feel each other's emotions and share each other's dreams and fears, intuitions, and ambitions. The connection didn't last for long. The most superficial impressions of Clint's mate faded the same night as the guests left the circus and the carnival behind. And even the deepest emotions, including that fear of heights Clint had never known before, faded into nothing as they left New York City and a few weeks later, even the state. The only thing Clint was left with was a world filled with color and the knowledge that somewhere out there there was a person he was connected with in a unique way. Almost a year later, about a month after the circus had left their winter camp, Clint's world changed again. This time, it started in the middle of an afternoon show. Clint had just finished his main act and was in the back, checking his arrows and bow, when he was hit with a wave of debilitating pain that let him stumble back and gasp for air. They were across the country, far away from New York, but Clint could feel the connection as strong as the day it had first started. The pain, as bad as it was just the beginning. It was followed by flashes of light and dark, of the world vanishing in front of his eyes and reappearing a heartbeat later, until finally it got darker around the edges and the color and vibrancy vanished as if it were burnt away. Clint collapsed on the rubber mats covering the floor, gasping for air and clinging to anything he could find to ground himself within this reality that had just changed. Clint knew what this meant. He knew that there was only one explanation for this, only one reason why someone lost their ability to see the world in color after a connection had originally been made. Clint's soulmate was dead. It wasn't surprising as much as Clint had expected it. Somehow, deep down, there had never been a person in Clint's life that he didn't end up losing. He wasn't surprised that his soulmate was no exception from the rule. No, the young Carney was more disappointed than surprised. He was disappointed because, this time, he didn't even get the chance to meet the special person in his life before he lost them again. He was disappointed because some part of him dared to hope that maybe he got lucky this time. It was almost two decades later that Clint learned how wrong he had been. 18 years later, after Clint's world had once again turned gray, his life had changed in every aspect. He was no longer an outcast between outcasts. He was no longer the carny everyone else used as a punching bag, and as of a few days ago, Clint wasn't even just the agent that had been dragged in from the street anymore. He was one of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s highest-ranking assets. He was the one that got picked to assist in the most delicate and dangerous mission. Coulson and Fury trusted him. They trusted him, even after he had been brainwashed and joined the very enemy they were fighting. They trusted him, even after he had killed agents and endangered not just the mission they were on, but the entire world with actions that weren't his own. Fury trusted Clint, even after the first man who had ever trusted him was dead, killed in an opportunity that had only existed because Clint had failed to resist. The team Fury and Coulson had built trusted him enough to fight by his side as they went up against the very enemy that had used him before. It was a fight that, for the first time in many years, brought Clint back to New York City. It brought him back to the very city where the connection with his soulmate had first been established. Clint didn't think about his soulmate anymore. He knew it was futile. And even though he couldn't forget about that connection, Clint had pushed the memories of it down, as far as they would go, locked them away in the deepest, darkest corner of his mind. He didn't think about this mysterious person that could have changed his life forever as he descended over the city in this new, patched-together team of misfits, the Avengers. He didn't think about them as the team worked out a plan, as they took their positions around Stark Tower and as they waited for their signal to join the fight. Clint didn't think about it until he was standing at the edge of a building, looking down, and for the first time in 18 years, the emotion it caused in him was fear instead of Amelia's safety. He didn't think about them until instincts that weren't his own helped guide him through this fight, until anger that didn't come from Loki messing with his mind, but from the city he had no connection with being destroyed, balled up in his chest. Hawkeye didn't think about his soulmate until there was a dream of a better world that he hadn't thought about in a very long time aching in his chest, and the world seemed different, even if it was still just as colorless as it had been just hours before. Maybe Clint had been wrong about his soulmate. "I spent 18 years thinking you were dead, you know," Clint muttered, years later as he was lying spread out in a bed somewhere in Hell's Kitchen, with the man he had missed long before they even really met. "After you lost your sight, and I lost that last bit that I have left of our bond, I thought you were dead." He traced his hand over Matt's chest, feeling the many different scars that were cut into his skin. It was the only thing that made sense. "I'm sorry," Matt answered. He was trailing his hand through Clint's hair and had the other loosely rested around Clint's waist. "I wish there could have been a way to find you. I wish we could have met that day, but there were so many people there, and I didn't know you were one of the Carnies until it was already too late." He sighed, brushing a kiss on Clint's head. "I thought I had lost you forever." "I'm here now." Clint pushed himself up, leaning over Matt and softly cupping his face. "And I'm not going to let you out of my sight ever again." Matt smiled softly for a moment, his unfocused gaze resting somewhere between Clint's head and the ceiling. "I'm sorry about that fear of heights, by the way," he chuckled after a moment of mutual silence. "I know up high is always where you felt safest." "I feel safest when I'm with you, darling," Clint purred, stroking a strand of hair back and brushing a kiss on Matt's lips. "I don't need to be up high for that." Author's note about this universe. Clint and Matt are soulmates. A person can see color once they've met their soulmate. When soulmates are close enough, they share emotion, dreams, fears, etc. Clint can't see color because Matt is blind. They're both trans, just because. Clint and Matt met randomly at the circus, but never actually interacted. Until they met at some point as Hawkeye and Daredevil, there is no difference to the MCU other than soulmates existing.
Chapter 3. Dark Academia. Summary. Clint and Matt get to a cozy book cafe to study. "I'm just saying it's an interesting choice to go to a place like this and order that." Matt had a bright, very fun smile plastered to his face as he signed and gestured to the almost disgustingly sweet whipped cream top drink Clint had just set down on the table. "It's an interesting choice for a blind man to pick a book cafe for a study date," Clint pouted, dropping onto one of the big wooden armchairs with leather-covered cushions and taking a sip. "I like my coffee sweet, and it's not like it makes any difference for you." "You're right, sweetie." Matt gave in, smiling softly, and started to set up his laptop and course materials on the table. "Is it the way you like it?" "It's perfect." Clint took another sip, the slight note of spices and sugar mixing with the scent of Matt's own coffee and making him smile. "I would say you should try it, but I'm not sure I want to share with you anymore." He was still pouting, and Matt couldn't help but smile softly at how petty his partner could be. "I love you." Matt signed simply, taking a sip from the antique mug his drink came in and sticking one of his earbuds in his ear so he could hear his text-to-speech system. "Love you too." Clint hummed, studying Matt for a moment before looking around the room. "It's really pretty here." "Yeah, I heard." Matt nodded. "I really like the whole atmosphere. It's cozy and much quieter than the dorms or the libraries on campus, even when it's busier than today." "I'm kind of ruining the aesthetic," Clint chuckled quietly, looking down himself and at the slightly oversized t-shirt and the naturally distressed jeans he was wearing. "You fit in much nicer. Looks like you actually belong here with your stupid nerd clothes." "Just get to work, idiot," Matt laughed fondly, sweating in the general direction of where he estimated Clint's backpack to lie on the wooden floor. "We're here to study, not to muse about aesthetic and clothing choices." "I hate dating a nerd," Clint complained without heat, pulling out his laptop and mouse and taking another sip while it started up. Mart closed his eyes behind his rose glasses for a moment, taking in the quiet sounds of the few other guests reading or studying or having quiet conversations. It's not my fault that you choose to punish yourself with black coffee when you have so many other options. Mart heard the couple that owned the mansion and the cafe in it having a similar banter on the other side of the room where they were sitting and working while the store wasn't too busy. We're literally selling that stuff. It's not like you don't have any other options. It's just what I'm used to, Charles, and you know why. The older of the two men, Eric, if Mart remembered correctly, answered. There was a hint of a smile on his voice, but Mart could also hear pain and grief in it, which no doubt showed in the man's expression if his partner's reaction was anything to go by. Can you get me the stack of books you got on your trip? Charles changed the topic of the conversation, giving his partner room for emotions he clearly didn't want to talk about. Eric got up, the wooden chair he had been sitting on creaking slightly, and walked to one of the tall bookshelves that covers almost every wall of the room that Mart assumed used to be a reading hall, or maybe a library, once upon a time. The tall man climbed onto a step stool, took a stack of heavy old books from one of the upper shelves where his partner couldn't have reached them from his wheelchair, and set them down on the desk. Thank you, darling. The other man, Charles, smiled, his voice laced with a heavy British accent Mart had noticed the first time he spoke. As both men went back to whatever they were working on, quiet fell over the large room. The sounds of pages being turned and papers being shuffled over the tables, as well as the steady and familiar sound of Clint taping away on his computer, echoed off the high ceilings, giving Mart a nice level of background noise without being overwhelming. Mart opened his eyes again, and even as the world stayed dark, he focused back on his immediate surroundings, his own laptops and the papers he had printed out. Author's note about this universe. College AU, no powers AU. Clint is studying computer science or something like that. Mart is studying law. Charles and Eric are living at Charles' mansion and converted a formerly unused part of the building into a cafe / antique bookstore / library.
Chapter 5. Chess Players. Summary. Clint and Mart are opposing chess players in a tournament. I thought contestants weren't allowed to bring their own boards. Clint raised an eyebrow, studying first a new board and then his opponent setting it up on the first table in the row. Clint's table. Well, Hawkeye. The younger man took the official game clock off the table and set it on the ground next to the standard wooden board before replacing it with a different one. This one was bright yellow. The display was slightly bigger than the ones Clint was used to, but most noticeably, there were two earbuds connected to it. You have your accommodations? I have mine. He answered a little too sweetly, sticking the earbud on his side in his ear and, for the first time, looking up at Clint. Or, rather, he raised his head, roughly facing Clint, his eyes hidden by mostly opaque red glasses. You're blind, Clint realized. It's a tactile board. And a talking clock, yes. Clint's opponent, Mart, if the schedule was correct, nodded. You're deaf, which is why you're sitting closest to the front so you don't miss any important announcement. He seemed annoyed, and Clint could guess that he had this conversation a lot. Now, can we start, or do I have to waste any more time getting some official to explain you that this board and the clock followed the tournament rules to a T, and have been approved by the jury? No, sorry. Clint bit his lip, finally sitting back down in his usual seat and setting his water bottle on the ground. Ready when you are. Clint liked playing against new opponents. Sure, there was something reassuring about playing against people he was familiar with. People he had played, and maybe even won against before. People whose tells he could read and whose favorite moves he knew. But there was something exciting about playing someone new. It teased the parts of his brain that craved chaos and adventure, and it kept him more on edge than any other game in the tournament. Do you want me to narrate my moves? Clint offered after watching his opponent track the pieces on the field with his hands for a few turns. Would probably make this whole thing a lot more efficient, wouldn't it? If you don't mind, the other player nodded. It can be a little hard to keep track. Sure, Clint nodded as well, making his new move. If I forget, or if you want to know something else, just let me know. If I can do anything to make this easier for you, you let me know. Mart offered a soft smile. Clint watched him make his next move and click the button on the clock before resting his hand with his fingers on either side of the board. Do you mind some small talk? Clint asked after a moment of turns, during which he was narrating his moves while the other was simply quietly nodding. It keeps me from getting distracted. Maybe you shouldn't tell your opponents that it helps you focus. Matt mused, mock thoughtful. You know, you getting distracted could be rather helpful for me. I believe in being honest with the people I play against. Clint shrugged. Makes it more satisfying when I beat them. Very honorable of you. Matt nodded. Sure, I don't mind some small talk. I'm just generally not a very talkative person. I'm bad at shutting up, so... Clint rode off, chuckling quietly. After a moment and two more turns, he nodded to the bright yellow chess clock. What does that thing actually tell you? Just the same things it tells you, Matt shrugged. When I click my button, it tells me how much time I have left, and when you click yours, it tells me how much you have. The other buttons are for changing the settings like usual, plus volume control. He made his turn, then pointed his face roughly at Clint. I've offered you to try it, but... I don't think that'd work out. Clint chuckled quietly. No, probably not. Matt nodded, a soft smirk playing with his lips. You were hearing it, right? Yeah, bilateral BTEs. Clint nodded. They're purple. That's very good to know, Matt laughed. Do you mind talking about... He trailed off, gesturing useless towards his eyes. Talk about what, Hawkeye? Matt smirked teasingly for a moment before he gave in. No, I don't have any remaining vision, but I get by just fine without it. As he spoke, his expression changed from teasing to defensive. Buddy, I don't think you'd make it to this kind of event if you didn't have a grip on your disability. Clint chuckled. Besides, it's not like we're the only ones here. There's another deaf girl, there's the very pretty guy with the prosthetic arm, and there's the guy who keeps stealing second place from me who's a tetraplegic. Meyer, Bucky, and Charles. Matt nodded. Three very good players, he acknowledged. Have you played Maya? Clint asked curiously. When Matt nodded, he added another question. How does that work? I mean, I know she has an interpreter, but... Just like any other game, Hawkeye. Matt chuckled. We use my board and clock. I use the tactile board and pieces to determine the position, and if there's anything else we have to talk about, then, like you said, she has an interpreter. He shrugged. It's not ideal, but we make it work. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Clint nodded. He scanned the board for a moment, trying to determine what the other man was playing at. Your turn, Matt teased, smirking again. Clint hummed, contemplating the maneuvers they had both made again and making a decision. The game went on for another few rounds until Matt took his glasses off, folding the arms and sticking it into the chest pocket of his shirt. He made another move, cornering Clint's king and cutting off any other moves that could save him. Checkmate, Hawkeye. Author's notes. About this universe. No powers AU. Clint and Matt, Maya, Bucky, Charles, and many others are all chess players. Clint and Bucky are dating, and Charles and Eric are dating. Chapter 8. Wings. Bucky has a bad day. They get into a fight with Clint, but luckily Matt is there to comfort them. Chapter Warnings. Chronic pain, aftermath of torture and mutilation. Hey, shh. Clint's voice was quiet, scared. It was clear he was holding back tears, even through layers of wood and stone as Matt made his way up the last flight of stairs. I get it, it's... No! Bucky's voice was loud and angry. It was laced with pain and decades worth of grief and fear. No, you don't get it! They scoffed, almost turning into a yell, and Matt knew they were pacing now, even as he waited in front of the door for a moment before entering. You don't get it, Clint, because you have wings. You can just go out there and fly and be fucking free. The words hurt, and they made the ragged scars on Matt's back worse, made the hole in his heart bigger, and tore open old wounds. Sighing deeply, Matt rested his head against the door, the hand already on the doorknob, but not turning it yet. He needed a moment to regulate himself first, and for Bucky to get out the worst of his anger. It wouldn't help anyone if they made each other hurt worse right now. You just don't fucking get it. Bucky scoffed again, his footsteps heavy on the old wooden floors of the apartment as they walked into the bedroom, slamming the door into the lock behind him after adding, "And I hope you never will." Matt waited another moment until he had stopped shaking as much before finally opening the door. Clint didn't react, and for a moment Matt wasn't entirely sure what he was doing until he dropped his head back into one of the pillows of the couch with a groan. This didn't just tell Matt where he was, it also meant that Clint's field of view shifted enough so he could see the door and his partner. For another second, neither of them said anything as Matt started unbuttoning his coat with slightly shaking fingers, before Clint sighed again, sitting up and turning in Matt's direction. "Shit day?" Matt guessed, not mentioning the fight. "You hurt, didn't you?" Clint muttered, taking one of the fidget toys from the side table and playing with it absently. "Yeah, it was hard to miss," Matt nodded, hanging up his jacket and cane and throwing off his shoes. "Can you talk to Buck?" Clint asked quietly. "I think I messed up this time." "Yeah," Matt offered a weak smile. "Can you make some dinner?" Clint nodded, humming a wordless confirmation, but not getting up just yet. "He's right, you know." Matt couldn't stop himself from pointing out that he agreed with Bucky. "You don't know what it's like." Matt stopped next to the couch on his way to the bedroom they shared. "You have your trauma and your disabilities, and I know you can understand a lot of ours, but..." "But I have my wings." Clint cut him off, completing the sentence himself. "I know. I didn't mean it the way I said it, and I'm sorry. I really am." "I know." Matt nodded. "Just think before you speak next time." Clint narrated another nod with a quiet hum, then dropped back against the back of the couch. "Go make some dinner. I think we have everything for Bucky's favorite. It'll make him feel better." Matt urged Clint, mostly because he wanted to bring some more distance between the two before he tried to talk to Bucky. Clint got up with another sigh, but Matt knew he had gotten the hint and wouldn't interrupt until he was explicitly invited back into the conversation. Matt waited until Clint was in the kitchen, then walked up to the bedroom door and knocked softly. "Go away, I don't want to talk to you," Bucky called, too loud for Matt, and it was clear that he had been crying. "It's Matt," Matt said, leaning his head against the door again. The cool wood was grounding, distracting him from the old pain of his old scars. "Can I come in?" "Alone," Bucky all but growled. Matt sighed, relieved, and opened the door just far enough so he could slip in before closing it softly again. "Hey." Bucky didn't answer, but they let out a near silent sob that was additionally muffled by the pillows on the bed. His boyfriend walked through the room carefully until he found the edge of the bed. He followed it with one hand on the mattress and sat down next to Bucky. Wordlessly, Matt reached out, surprised to find his partner shirtless, but still not saying another word. He simply traced his hand along Bucky's hips, then up his back, along their spine until he found the two big, uneven scars and the edge of metal where his prosthetic arm was anchored permanently into his shoulder. Neither of them said anything, as Matt started massaging the tense muscles on the marked skin with gentle hands until the quiet sobs died down and Bucky stopped snuffling. "The pain is the worst part," Matt said simply when Bucky shifted to rest his head on his arms and look back at their boyfriend. "Sometimes I just want to forget, but I can't because the fucking pain is always there," Bucky muttered, rolling to his side and nudging Matt with their leg. "Come here." Matt smiled softly, shrugging his suit jacket off before lying down with his back to Bucky. Bucky brushed a kiss into Matt's hair, wordlessly trailing their hands over his shirt and slipping open the buttons. They slipped their hands into his shirt, trailing over his scars for a moment before moving onto his back and tracing the deep chemical burn scars there as well. "Clint doesn't get it," Matt muttered after a moment of Bucky softly massaging the tension of a long day out of his muscles. "He's doing his best, but he just doesn't understand it." Bucky hummed in agreement, nodding against the back of Matt's head. "He's making lasagna for dinner." "I'm guessing you heard me yell at him," Bucky sighed. Matt nodded. "I just can't take seeing him like that sometimes," Bucky muttered, lightly wrapping his arms around Matt's middle. "Let him take you to the sky sometime," Matt suggested after a moment of comfortable mutual silence. "I know it seems like it's only going to make it worse, but the feeling of flying like that, even if it's not with your own wings, it's amazing. It truly is pure freedom, and Clint, he's He's so gentle and caring. Matt closed his eyes and leaned into Bucky's embrace, remembering the feeling of flying for the first time. He wants to help, but he's just as lost as we are in this. Author's note about this universe. Clint, Bucky, and Matt are dating. Clint and Bucky met as Avengers. Clint and Matt met in some chaotic way. Clint introduced Matt to Bucky at some point, and they bonded over mutual trauma. Most people gain their wings at some point during childhood or at the latest as a young adult. Matt lost his wings in the accident when he was 9. He's still blind, but doesn't have powers. Bucky didn't fully develop his wings before he was drafted or ended up at Hydra, and they mutilated him. He never told Steve until he fell off the train and couldn't save himself because of it. Clint gained his wings at the circus at some point. Clint and Matt are trans, and Bucky's non-binary. Just because. Chapter 12. Animagos. Summary. Clint, Matt, and Bucky always manage to get themselves and each other in trouble. Foggy is used to it. Matt? Foggy calls through the apartment, looking for his partner underneath the couch and on all the other little nooks and crannies he liked hiding out in after a long day. Matthew, where are you, you little devil? He sighed, pushing the closet door open and shining the light of his phone screen into the small pile of blankets at the bottom. No, of course not, he muttered, when he didn't find Matt there or in any of the other spots in the bedroom. Would be too much to ask to leave a message before you vanish into the night. He sighed, dropping onto the couch with a bottle of beer in his hand and picking up his book from the side table. By the time Foggy looked up for more than a few seconds again, darkness had fallen over the city, and he could hear the sounds of animals scrabbling on the roof above him. There we go. Foggy sighed, putting his book down for a moment and emptying his beer, while trying to figure out how many different creatures were snapping, growling, and hissing at each other on the other side of the roof access door. It took a moment until they had calmed down enough that they managed to fight their way through the folding door. Foggy had been trained not to call it a doggy door by too many growls and bites, and 3 different sized bundles of fluff stumbled and almost fell down the stairs. Foggy didn't look up from his book to turn to face them. Had fun out there? He asked, turning the page. There was a scrabble of claws on the hardwood floor, the soft chatter of Bucky, Matt's quiet barks, and, after a moment, the quiet clicking and chirping sounds that meant Clint had caught on with the conversation. No blood on the carpets, Foggy warned. The stop in all 3 animals' steps enough of a sign that he had guessed correctly and at least one of them had been injured in a fight. You need any help? There was a moment of silence, then the slightly swaying steps of the possum and the skipping steps of the raccoon made their way through the living room while the fox walked up to the edge of the carpet, tilting his head with slightly cloudy, beady eyes and staring roughly in Foggy's direction. This time, the human looked up, smiling softly at the sight of his partner. Hey, are you okay? Matt tripped softly, raising the front paw he had hurt a few days before, but not showing any other sign of injury. Wanna cuddle when you help your friends? Foggy offered, tilting his head and watching the flick of Matt's ears as he picked up on something well out of the human hearing range. For a moment, they just sat in silence until Matt got up, following the other 2 to the bathroom. It took a moment of Clint whining and hissing and the other 2 growling and barking at him until they came back out, Bucky's near-silent steps first, and a moment later Clint, who was clearly playing up how much pain he was in, and Matt, who wasn't buying it any more than his partner. Come here, you little idiots. Pitching his voice softer and his expression gentler than the words would imply, knowing that Clint probably wouldn't be able to hear him, Foggy patted the couch next to himself, closing his book and putting it down on the table again. What kind of mess did you get yourself into this time, huh? He asked, scratching Matt's neck when the deep red fox had curled up on his lap and watching the other 2 snuggle up close to each other in the excess of the blanket that he had pulled over himself at some point in the evening. You guys are much too cute for all the trouble you get into, he chuckled, tracing a hand along Matt's back and humming. Your fur is red, so beautiful, like an angel in disguise. The soft bite he got for that was definitely worth the stupid look on Matt's face as he understood the reference. Author's notes about this universe. Animal Transformation AU. Some people, like Matt, Clint, and Bucky, can transform into animals. They don't have any other magical abilities, it's just that. Bucky is a raccoon, Clint is a possum, Matt is a fox. They still have their disabilities. So Clint is deaf, Matt is blind, and Raccoon Bucky is missing a front leg. Foggy is very used to their shenanigans, but he can't stay mad at them for long when they curl up around him and are all cute and fluffy. Matt and Foggy are dating, Bucky and Clint are dating. I don't think they're a big polycule, but it doesn't really matter for the overall story, so it's up to interpretation. Chapter 14. Princes and Princesses. Summary. Matt is a knight supposed to marry the young princess and become the next prince once she is crowned queen. There is just one problem. Clint is not actually a princess. Warnings: structural homophobia, queerphobia, and transphobia. Your Majesty, Matt approached the royal family, offering a small but polite bow when they turned their attention to him. Please excuse my interruption. I was hoping to speak to my betrothed alone for a few moments. He deliberately avoided gender terms as much as he could whenever he talked about Clint around his family or in public, trying to preserve as much of his dignity as he could while also keeping his cover for as long as was possible and necessary. Of course, dear, the old queen answered, a fond smile in her voice. I'll be in my study, honey, she informed Clint, then turned and walked back along the path they had come. When she was well out of earshot, Matt turned to face Clint fully, bowing his head slightly and offering a hesitant hand. Sir Matthew, Clint sighed. What can I do for you? I just hoped I could spend a little time with my future husband. Matt smirked slightly, waiting until the words fully registered with the young prince. I'm not really in the mood to... Wait, what? Even without seeing his expression, Matt could tell that Clint was gaping at him. We both know you're not the princess everyone wants to see in you, darling. Matt purred, offering Clint a hand more insistently. And you're going to be delighted to find out that I'm not really that interested in women at all. I still... Clint sighed, biting his lip. I'm still born as one. I know, Matt nodded, simply taking Clint's hand and throwing all politeness into the wind. But that doesn't mean you have to be one forever. I'm supposed to be queen soon, he scoffed. You're supposed to be my prince. I can still be your prince, Matt shrugged, standing so he was fully facing his fiancée. And who better to change all those stupid laws that force you to pretend like you're someone you're not than the king, huh? The people would hate me for that. Clint scoffed again. I can't afford that. Sweetheart, there are more people like us out there than you might think, Matt told him gently. You're not alone. You'd have support. You'd have my support. I don't know if I can do that, Clint sighed. It doesn't have to be your first course of action, Matt offered with a smile. But when you're ready, I'll be there with you, and I'll face everyone who wants to hate you for it. I'm your knight in shining armor. He gestured to his partial armor that he knew was shimmering red in the sunlight. Quite literally. That made Clint chuckle quietly, even if there was still worry and pain in his heartbeat and his posture. You're my prince, no matter what everyone else says. Matt softly capped Clint's face, waiting to see if he wanted to pull away before tracing his hand along the guy's face and through his long hair. And I think you're the most handsome man I've ever met. Author's note. About this universe. Clint is the next in line for the throne. He's trans but can come out because of the social implications. Matt's a knight, one of the best in the kingdom. Matt's gay, but he couldn't say no to getting married to the princess because he's not in the position to deny that. Chapter 30, The Beginning of the World. Summary. Clint and Matt watch the end of the world and make a promise to each other. It's weird, isn't it? Clint asked, leaning back against the piece of wall in his back and watching over the wasteland that was once their city. To be the last ones? Kinda liked it more to be the first ones. Matt agreed, sighing deeply and pushing the hood of his suit back. There was no reason to hide his demonic appearance anymore. No one was left to see his horns, the flaming halo, or his unseeing red eyes. There was still potential back then. Clint agreed, dropping his cloak and stretching his angel wings, his purple glowing eyes flaming up briefly before he let them settle. Not surprising, though, Matt sighed. What? Clint frowned, turning to face Matt. For a split second, the demon wanted to repeat himself, until he realized that this time the problem wasn't that Clint didn't hear him. It's not surprising that they didn't last long. It had been a few thousand years. On the scale of a human's life, it had been several generations. But to immortals, it had been mere moments. The way they have treated what they have been given... Yeah, Clint hummed again. As usual, the Celestial was more affected by the consequences of humanity's mistakes. It was in his nature. He was supposed to care, supposed to worry, and even supposed to hope they could change. Just sad that they had to drag everything else down with them. Matt sighed. He wasn't an angel. He wasn't burdened with hope and compassion the same way Clint was. He was a demon. His passions were different. He had loved this world, but not for the people in it. He had loved nature and animals. Always nice how compassionate you are about my favorite little idiots going extinct. Clint scoffed. There was no heat in his voice, but Matt still knew how much it hurt him. Hey, I'm sorry. He breathed, making sure to face his partner as he spoke too quietly for him to hear. I know what they meant to you, and I'm sorry they're gone. Yeah, Clint sighed deeply, stretching out his legs and looking out over the wasteland humanity had left behind on their planet again. Not like you could have done anything to stop them, either. We did everything we could, Matt agreed, hopping off the ledge and standing next to Clint to gently trace a hand along his jaw and pushing the long strands of hair falling into his face back so he could kiss him. No one could have saved them. He kissed Clint again. Or the world. Someone could have. Clint scoffed, tipping his head back and throwing a glance up at the sky. No one has seen it since it left us with this mess, Matt all but growled, his halo and the flaming tip of his tail blazing up with his anger. I know, Clint sighed, and I still haven't forgiven it, not for what it did to me, not for leaving, not for everything else. Still hurts every time it abandons us again. Matt finished when Clint trailed off in a sigh, slowly tracing long claws over his precise undercut. The angel nodded, looking up at his partner. We don't need it, Matt promised. We never did. He traced his hand along Clint's jaw again, then dragged one clawed thumb over his lip. We built all of this once. Let's do it again. Our way. Author's note. About this universe. Clint is an angel. Matt is a demon. It is some sort of deity who made the world but abandoned it more or less in their hands. Clint is trans because he pissed it off before they were sent to Earth. To human understandings, all demons are blind and all angels are deaf. But in their homeworld, everything works a little different.